Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for tuning into The Animal Files, the podcast where we expose the truth, science, and spirituality of pet care and provide you with the wisdom and tools you need to raise happy and healthy companion animals. My name is Victoria, an animal spirituality facilitator and integrative energy practitioner.
And my name is Miranda, an animal health technologist and pet care safety expert.
Let's dive in, shall we? Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Animal Files podcast. We have our first interview of season 4, and we are so excited to have Angela Artolina, who is a certified cannabis and fungi clinician, educator, speaker, and she even formulates her own products. And we are so excited to have her. So I am going to turn it over to Miranda, and we're going to learn everything we need to know about this awesome industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been actually hearing about it since maybe the beginning of last year. And we had a couple of possible interviews lined up, but they didn't end up coming through. And so I'm really excited that we are finally going to have the opportunity to talk with somebody as knowledgeable as you about these wonderful healing products.
I know. I'm so excited to share them with you and everything that I've been able to do as a practitioner on my own rescue at my own groom shops. And now what's beautiful is that, you know, since we launched the product in 2018, and since then we've had over 100,000 people use the product and be able to help and heal their own pets on their own, along with veterinarians that are now using the medicine with great success. And it's just beautiful to see how far we've come in a short time, but how much further we need to go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and confusion and everything else that is going on with these products. And maybe there might also be, I can't say for certain, but maybe by certain organizations, there might be a push against it.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a very interesting piece of research that I found that I think sums it up. And the research was showing how every time a state becomes medically legal to have marijuana as a medicine, Big Pharma loses 1.5 to 2% of their revenues.
Wow.
That doesn't sound like such a big deal, except last year Pfizer made $100.7 billion.
Oh, wow.
So it makes a big difference. And the reason why this happens is because cannabis interacts, hemp, marijuana, or all cannabis plants, they interact with a system that we all have. All animals have it, called the endocannabinoid system. And this system is the master system in our body that's in control of all of our other systems. And our doctors and veterinarians aren't taught anything about it. So that's why so many times we've gone to our doctors or veterinarians and didn't get the help that we needed, because they don't even understand how this master system works. So that's why so many weird, like fibromyalgia. You've probably heard fibromyalgia, it's in their head. They can't prove it. Fibromyalgia is a really bad deficiency of your endocannabinoid system. That's why they have no idea what it is, because they've never learned about this system. So when you understand how this system works, this system literally is built to interact with nature, with plants and fungi and herbs and adaptogens. And it's an innate system to help us heal. It's a system of receptors that are all throughout the body. It's called the endocannabinoid system. They've actually changed the name to the endocannabinoid-ome because they've now incorporated the gut microbiome as part of this system.
Oh, wow.
And it's in control of everything. So if you can interact directly with that system, you can make huge strides in anybody that's suffering from anything. When you take a pharmaceutical drug, your body doesn't know what to do with that synthetic. It really makes the body work extra. Your liver and kidneys have to process this synthetic drug. That means that the kidney and liver isn't doing what it's supposed to do because it's busy working on this synthetic. And in our animals, our dogs mostly, when the liver can't figure out what to do with it, it stores it in its fatty tissue. And that's where we get our old dogs with all the lumps and bumps all over them, which oftentimes turn into cancer if we don't do something about it.
Wow.
Wow.
So we got to remember, when we're sleeping at night, when our pets are sleeping at night, our bodies are detoxing and healing ourselves. They can't do that if they're filled with synthetic drugs or chemicals from their food or the carpet cleaner or the pesticide. They're literally surrounded by it. So this is the best way, in my opinion, to support any dog, any animal, any person who is suffering from anything, because it is dealing directly with that system and interacting with those receptors.
Science is fun.
It is. How did this system get discovered, or who discovered it?
Great question. It was discovered 30 years ago, and it was discovered when they found it in a rat's brain, a receptor reacting to THC. So they said to themselves, well, if a plant compound is reacting to this, then there must be some sort of system that has an endogenous, something that matches THC, which they do, anandamide. So this system produces endocannabinoids. And when we are deficient in these endocannabinoids, the cannabis plant produces phytocannabinoids that literally replace and fill those deficiencies. So it literally can bring you back to homeostasis by taking this plant. All medicine, everything that we need, food and medicine, nature provides us. However, pharmaceutical drugs cannot patent nature and make $1 billion off of it. So they take that plant. I want to say all, but I'm not sure that's true. But the majority of pharmaceuticals on the market are taken from plants and fungi that do the job. It's called pharmacokinetics. And they take just one compound out. They just have to prove that it does whatever they say it does. What they don't tell you or show you is how many animals got sick, died, had, you know, terrible complications because they altered the medicine. And they put a synthetic in it. And those receptors, when that synthetic comes to that receptor, it has no idea what to do with it. The receptor's like, I don't know who you are, get out of here. If it's a plant or mushroom, it goes shoop and connects to it and does its work. So it's just, again, real food, real medicine from nature. That's what we need. And that's what we need to feed ourselves and our animals to keep us at homeostasis and operating. So after 1988, after they found it in the rat's brain, I think they then discovered in dog's gut tissue, the CB2 receptor. So that's how they found the two receptors. And then the research from then on out has been like nonstop, especially after 2018. Majority of research comes from overseas, like Israel is the leader. But literally, if people are listening, wondering if cannabis, hemp could be the answer to anything, they literally can go onto Google and type cannabis and Cushing's disease research, and the page will be filled with it. So people who say, where's the research? Where's the studies? It's all out there. And then I also challenge you, if you're going to ask me that, then I want you to show me the research for the drugs that you're currently taking. I want you to read, where's that research? And when you pull up that research, I want you to scroll down to the bottom and I want you to tell me how many animals died, because they don't tell you that part. They don't show you that part. There's a beautiful little abstract at the top that says, this is what this research is doing, and this is what it did. And then you go to the bottom and find out the real story. I travel the country talking about this all the time, but I went ahead and looked up, you know, you can imagine when I tell people that and they're like, oh, well, what if you're going to get high? My dog's going to get high. Where's the proof? Where's the research? So I go and I do the research on chemotherapy, radiation, and amputation. And chemotherapy, if you did just chemotherapy, it added 300 days to the lifespan. You did radiation and chemotherapy, 320 days. You did the amputation, I want to say you got up to 350. What you didn't see is how many dogs, I want to say it was like based on 72 dogs. And at the end, it was only 12 dogs alive.
Wow.
At the end of the research study. But those were their findings. And then when I turned around and looked at what I did at my rescue farm with my own cancer dogs, I was getting 850 days. And I wasn't working against my dog's system. I was working with their system. Meaning chemotherapy, destroys your gut microbiome, yeah. which is where your 80% of your immune system lives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to rebuild it. And, you know, going through an amputation, going through surgery, and then all the antibiotics and painkillers, all of those are synthetics that are going to not help your pet, that your pet not only has to deal with the cancer, it also has to deal with all of these synthetic drugs. Dr. PJ Broadfoot, one of my favorite holistic veterinarians, said it best. She's like, you need to understand, when you put your dog under anesthesia, it literally puts the immune system offline. Meaning, if the immune system is already helping fight off something and keep you healthy, and you put a dog under surgery or anesthesia, what do you think the cancer does? It goes, woohoo, let's go.
Yeah.
And then you come out of the surgery, your immune system is working on the amputation or healing or whatever, and not fighting the cancer anymore. And that's literally when the cancer takes over.
Mm-hmm.
So when people have the old dog with the lump or bump and run to get it biopsied or cut off, I'm like, no, don't do that. That's not the first thing that you should do. Because even taking a biopsy of a cancerous tumor, when they pull that needle out, they are releasing the cancer cells into that mesenchymal layer in between that it can now spread throughout the whole entire body.
Oh, wow.
So it really is, to me, like I say, every senior citizen should be on a full spectrum hemp extract, and we should be taking these mushrooms.
Mm.
Mushrooms share 30% of our DNA.
Mm.
How weird is that?
That's pretty weird.
That's pretty amazing.
They're more animal than plant.
Mm.
So you got to say, why is that? That's because we should be consuming mushrooms every single day. If you guys haven't seen it, or your listeners haven't seen it, the Netflix documentary, Fantastic Fungi, watch it. It's the most beautiful documentary. You'll love it. You'll go, yes, we are one with mushrooms. Because things that mushrooms do when we eat them, mushrooms are both an incredible functional food and functional medicine. So when we eat them, they feed our gut microbiome. They're an all-natural prebiotic. 3 grams of mushrooms feeds our gut and our pet's gut for 13 days.
Wow.
That means that 13 days, they literally could come across anything, eat something bad, take a toxin, and their gut is going to go, nope, get out. We don't need you, kind of thing. And then as a medicine, they're an incredible source of all kinds of amazing medicinal compounds, nutrients, minerals, vitamins. Mushrooms are one of the best sources of vitamin D, D2, D3 that you could possibly get. And every dog I know is deficient in vitamin D.
I think every human is too.
Every human is. But at least we can go outside and lay in the sun, and they can't. So, yeah. You know, when I learned that, or any dog suffering from cancer is always super low in vitamin D. But guess what? Both hemp and mushrooms industries are completely unregulated. So you really have to be careful and know how to pick your products, because it's unregulated. Anybody can literally put anything they want in a bottle and call it whatever they want. And we don't know.
Yeah.
And if it's somebody that has a lot of money and a lot of marketing behind it, it can look pretty convincing. So the only thing that you can do when it comes to a hemp extract is that there's something called the hemp industry, who put out guidelines, and we follow those. So on our products, we have a QR code on every single label with a batch number carved into the bottom. And when you scan it with your phone, it literally takes you to our certificate of analysis from a third party lab that shows you what this is, meaning that it's a full spectrum hemp extract. It has all of the cannabinoids that are listed in it, and there's 114. They're not all going to be in it, but the two major ones are CBD and THC. So you want to make sure that those are in there. And all we need for THC is 0.03%, which is what's legal in all 50 states, and just enough to make your product a full spectrum hemp extract. You only want to take full spectrum when you're dealing with hemp. Broad spectrum is when they put it through another process to remove the THC, which literally makes the medicine useless. Remember those receptors I told you about?
Mm-hmm.
When you take CBD, a full spectrum hemp extract, THC binds to the receptor first, then CBD can. If you don't have THC in there, CBD never finds its way to the receptor.
It's like the doorman.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have that THC in there. And people need to get over THC being scary or toxic. They actually, in 1973, did a piece of research. It was called the Rosencrantz study. They wanted to see how much THC it took to kill a person. And guess what they do? They tested on animals. So they tested on lab rats, beagles, and chimpanzees. They gave them 9,000 milligrams.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Insanity. I consume cannabis every single day. I can't imagine 9,000 milligrams. Two rats regurgitated in their sleep and choked and died from that. No beagles died. No chimpanzees died. And as a matter of fact, within, I believe, 3 months, the chimpanzees were able to regulate themselves and they weren't even high anymore after 3 months. And that kind of was the same thing I experienced with my Doberman that I gave 10 milligrams of THC, which is a human dose of THC, which let me back up a little bit. Remember those receptors I told you about?
Mm-hmm.
Dogs have already been researched and found to have double to 10 times more of the receptors than we do. So they're much more sensitive to the medicine, which is great. That means we can get a lot done with, you know, a 1,000 milligram bottle. Humans, we don't have as many receptors, so we need more. So 10 milligrams of THC with us, sure, we might be high, but for a dog, it should make them very high. Was she very high? Absolutely. But, and this is great for anybody who walks into a dispensary and gets a product and takes it and goes, whoa, I don't like this. I'm too high. CBD dampens the effects, side effects of THC, which is the high. So Nina was having the side effect of incontinence when she went to sleep on the 10 milligrams. When I gave her the CBD with it, with the THC, completely stopped.
Oh, wow.
So I literally had no side effects from my Doberman taking 10 milligrams for over 2 years. It kept all of her pain away and kept the cancer from spreading. It was incredible. At 21 months, when I finally had to get her leg amputated because it was in her wrist and cutting off circulation to her foot, the vet I took her to did 8 diagnostic tests to see, let's see where the cancer is. Let's see what it's doing after 2 years of this aggressive cancer that she's had, and nothing.
Oh, wow.
Not even find a speck. Have you ever had that where they're like, oh, there's this weird little speck I want to look at or keep an eye on? Not even that. For my company, CBD Dog Health and MycoDog, I have a board of advisors, which are holistic, integrative veterinarians, practitioners, experts in the field. And when I got this diagnostics on Nina, I scratched out the name and sent it to them. And I go, hey, what do you think is wrong with this dog? And there's 12 of them. And all of them came back like low vitamin D and magnesium, but otherwise looks perfectly healthy. I said, this is Nina after 2 years with osteosarcoma. I mean, mind's blown. Like, how is someone who is not a veterinarian and only understands this one system able to do? I understand diet and nutrition a little bit too, so that helps.
Yeah.
How am I able to do what doctors and veterinarians aren't able to do without chemotherapy, radiation, and whatever? Because I'm interacting directly with that system with pure natural medicine.
Yeah, I don't think vets have or are allowed to have the extensive training necessary for a lot of these holistic things. I don't think the actual association allows that. I mean, I think there's movements toward allowing some of that. But in my history of being a cat mom and having 15 cats under my belt at this point and dealing with vets for cancers, kidney failures, diabetes, all that stuff. There have been certain situations where I tried to look at some holistic things that I could add to the allopathic treatment and they worked. They don't know how it worked. And they keep telling me, I don't know how you do it. I've seen you work miracles with your animals. I'm like, I'm just.
Why aren't they asking? That's what I want to know.
I know.
When you just had another person, I just got off another podcast where she's giving her dad, let's see, he had skin cancer and he's got early onset of dementia or something like that. He went to his neurologist and said, what are you doing? You have no progression. Oh, my daughter's giving me some dog shit. That's literally what he said. Like, When you see that as a doctor, why aren't you asking, let me meet that person. What are you talking about? Let me write this down. How many times I've pet parents that say, I told my doctor, and I go, what did he say? All right, keep on doing what you're doing.
That's what I get all the time. Keep on doing what you're doing. And I even had to argue a couple things with one of my cats that had kidney failure. And this is, you know, a little bit of a tangent. Won't go into it too much, but it had to do with nutrition. And I refused to do what they had told me to do as far as his diet was concerned. And I said, no, I'm upping the protein. And they fought me and fought me and fought me, but I wouldn't give up. And I kept him around for 2 years. 2 years.
What are they
stage
fighting?
Three. I don't know what they're fighting. Because I think they're fighting.
Because they're not taught about diet and nutrition. So it's not like they were literally taught something else and they should be arguing with you about it. It's literally, they're taught anatomy and physiology. Yeah. Great. They can put your cat back together after it's been hit by a car. They can remove things. They can stitch things up. But when it comes to general health and well-being, they have no idea. They only have been taught how to write a prescription drug for that and point to the prescription food that helps for that, which is really unfortunate. And it's those vets that get out of school and go, I didn't learn anything.
Yeah.
That then continue their education and become holistic or integrative practitioners. That's the vet I want to go to because they want to keep on learning. And
they're asking the questions. That's what it's supposed to be. They're asking the questions.
Right, right. My biggest mission is to empower pet parents to trust your gut. You know your pet best. You do the research. Don't put a drug in you or your pet that you don't research thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Trust nobody. Don't even trust me. Go do your own research. Because literally, I can't tell you how many times I've been prescribed or given things and looked at the ingredients. And I'm like, no, I'm not putting this in my dog. I used to do consultations. I can't do them. I'm not cut out for that. I'm so glad I didn't become a veterinarian because I do not have the personality to do that. But when I did it, we did them for 2 years and I did it with a veterinarian. And the overuse and abuse of antibiotics and steroids is out of control. They prescribe it to everyone because that's all they know, you know? And it's sad. Yeah. And I hate it. And because we go to them and trust them and listen to them. And then, you know, my whole journey started losing my first dog at 7 years old after I did everything. The state-of-the-art killer vet office that opened up across from my house did it all. And she was gone at 7 years, $15,000, which I had no business paying, still lost her, got an autopsy done because I wanted to get to the bottom of it. And all they found was IBD because they ain't looking for all the, you know, drugs that destroyed her system or steroids and all the stuff they gave her. And nobody ever taught me about diet and nutrition, you know? So I killed my first dog, you know, listening.
I think a lot of us pet owners have had a situation like that in the beginning of our journey as pet parents, you know, because we trust. It's that authority, you know, a vet's an authority. And Miranda and I talk about this a lot, especially as far as research is concerned. You want to make sure you're going to reputable sources. Like, there's a lot of crap on the internet. So
yes, there is.
I just want to take that moment and just mention that when you're doing your research, guys, make sure you're going to credible sources.
Which can be difficult to determine.
Exactly. But you need to be, we always talk about putting your detective hat on. And you have to do that. And you have to realize that allopathic is not the only thing. And it is almost by design, I think, my opinion, don't come at me, that pharmaceuticals, they treat one thing at the expense of something else.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's supposed to be do no harm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's not what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that another big issue that comes into play is the questionable research, because people will quote, oh, well, they did research on this and they did research on that. So this proves that it's good or bad or whatever. And what I'm starting to notice is that these research studies that they're doing are done with not enough, what's the term that's used where you have like certain things in place and it stays the same throughout.
Protocol?
Controls.
Controls, yeah. Controls, yeah. Like the controls are not controlled enough. So there's too much room for variability. That's one thing. A lot of the time these groups are just on small groups. Like, oh, we did a study on 100 people. Okay, great. What about the rest of the however many millions of people are out there?
But we brought that up. We were talking about this before we got on. Mm-hmm. If you read that research, it starts with 100 people or dogs or whatever it is. And it gives you a little abstract at the beginning that makes it look like everything worked great. And then you go to the bottom and see that that was the findings were based on the 12 dogs mm-hmm. that were alive yeah. still at the end.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, that's not research. When it comes to cannabis, especially hemp, my favorite website is projectcbd.org. And they're absolutely trustworthy and they literally keep track of all of it. And you can type in an ailment and it will show you the research, all of that. They also vet products, you know, it's for humans, but all of the information, everything that cannabis, hemp, CBD does for us, it does for our pets. So it's no different except that our dogs are more sensitive to it. Not that it could kill them or anything, because remember, when you take something natural and your body gets too much of it, it just gets rid of it. When you take too much of a pharmaceutical drug, it kills you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big difference. I have a question for, yeah, big difference. I have a question for all of my fellow cat fanatics out there. Is there any difference in the research in regards to cats over dogs, because cats are carnivores and their systems are just slightly different? Are they more sensitive? Are they less sensitive? Is there any studies about that? Because we have a lot of cat fans out there mm-hmm. and want to make sure we cover all the bases.
We've helped so many cats. I love how many cats we've helped, because I feel like they are ignored and people also don't recognize when they're in pain or scared or anxious and all those types of things. So yes, the endocannabinoid system in us and the dogs and the cats and a giraffe and a bird and a turtle is all the same. Oh, only good. Thing okay. that's different is that dogs have been found to have more receptors. And I kind of have a feeling like, why is that? But I have a feeling if we were to like go test a coyote or a cheetah or another animal that has to hunt its prey, that I bet we would find that they have more receptors just because they probably need them. This was like a beautiful story that was told when I was in school of how important the endocannabinoid system is in animals, but you remember watching the documentaries on PBS and watching the cheetah go after the gazelle or the zebra. And, mm-hmm. and I'm sure we were all feeling for the zebra, right? Well, as that cheetah jumps on the back of that zebra, the zebra is not feeling any pain. Its endocannabinoid system is operating like nobody's business right then and there. And at the same time, that cheetah is being kicked like crazy by that zebra. He's also not feeling any pain. And I want people to understand that these wild animals that do this, their endocannabinoid system is so healthy. Imagine if it wasn't. If it wasn't, then we'd have a cheetah going, I don't know, he looks really strong and fast, and I don't think I'd be able to take him down. You know, or might hurt, or, you know, like literally, like they explained it like that. And it all made sense to me, like how it really is supposed to work and how the animal world is supposed to work. So I have a feeling that predator animals, because of what they have to do to feed themselves or whatever, that they probably have more receptors for that reason. But cats, we don't have that research. So basically it's what works for us, like works for them too. Cats, it's harder okay. to get it into their mouth a lot of times. But what's beautiful about cats is they have super absorbent paws. So you could literally massage it into their paws and it gets absorbed. You can put it on their back so that when they lick it, they get it. But it always is best to get a hemp extract in the mouth, especially ours. Ours is emulsified super small so that the moment it hits the gums, it gets absorbed. So it's literally bypassing digestive, everything, and getting right into the bloodstream and doing its work. Mushrooms are mostly water. So mushrooms, you can put it in their food and it will be just as good. So
Good information.
Products. I talked about looking for that COA for making sure it's a full spectrum hemp extract, that it has that little bit of THC and doesn't have any of the bad stuff in it. Mushrooms, that those labs don't test mushrooms. We're working on it so that we can literally show people apples to apples why ours is better. It doesn't have any of the bad stuff in it. So that's extremely aggravating right now. But mushrooms, what's happening is most people are growing mushrooms on a rice, corn, oats, sawdust, straw substrate. So they take the spores and they inoculate that substrate. They put it in a plastic bag. They put it in a dark, damp room and they let the mushrooms grow. Problem with that is that mushrooms have to grow on what they are found in nature, or they do not have the nutrients or the medicinal compounds that they say that they have. And most,
that makes a lot of sense.
I know. And most people are growing them the wrong way. So like chaga, for instance, is just so incredible, especially for digestive health, has to be grown on a birch tree. Mm. If it's not grown on a birch tree, it does not have betulinic acid, which is the most powerful compound that has to be in there. And most is not grown that way. So you literally are getting, I don't know what you're getting, maybe some sort of food, or I don't know what's in it. Nobody can test it and tell you. So it's very important to make sure. What's worse is that substrate, they inoculate the spores, the roots of it, which is called the mycelium, takes over the substrate and eats it. And then it pops out a little primordia, which is the baby mushroom. Most companies take that substrate, grind that whole thing up, put it in a capsule or in a powder and call it a mushroom supplement. Mm. That's not a mushroom supplement. What you want is the fruiting body, what we know of the mushroom, completely grows out at the appropriate time, is harvested at the appropriate time, and then it is extracted. So you have to dual extract the mushroom with both hot water and with alcohol, because you cannot get through. You got to break down the outer layer, the chitin, to get to the triterpenoids and the beta-glucans that have all the medicine in them. If you don't do the alcohol, you're not getting them. So what do most people just do? The hot water. So you want hot water, alcohol, and then we are a spagyric product, which is a whole nother explanation. Basically, all of our products are wild crafted and wild harvested. They are grown on the substrate that they're found in nature, out in the woods in nature. A person literally comes up and chops them and brings them to our mycoalchemist, who then extracts the medicine from it. After he extracts everything, when you're done with the extraction and you get all the medicine out, the leftover material, he literally purifies and puts back in. So it's considered a triple extraction, because you're literally getting all the medicinal properties that that mushroom has. It's better than anything else. My products are all human grade and like the best on the market. He makes mushroom products also. That's how I found him, is I just searched until I found someone making a human product. But he puts in an alcohol, which we don't want to give to our pets. And I also add other adaptogens, because remember, I have the education of knowing that when I put more adaptogens together, they become more powerful and synergistic. So you could have a 1,000 milligram something that has adaptogens in it, that's going to be 10 times more powerful than a 1,000 milligrams that's just a full spectrum hemp extract, because of those other adaptogens. So look at the label and make sure that the mushroom product does not say mycelium on it, or grain, or, you know, contains a substrate of any type. You want pure fruiting body, whole fruiting body extracts that are at least dual extracted.
Good to know.
Why do you think there's such a variation in the processing and creation, I guess, of these products? And why other organizations, companies feel like what they're doing is good enough?
Because they're just not educated. You know, they haven't learned the science behind it. They don't understand that, you know, it's the same thing with food. When we look at a cow, and a cow who's grass-fed and grass-finished, filled with nutrients, versus that factory-farmed cow that ate grain. Mm. Completely two different pieces of beef. One filled with nutrients and good for you, and one that is not going to be good for you and give you the nutrients you need. It's the same thing. Money, it is so much easier to rent a warehouse and some shelves, and I don't even need electricity, and put a whole bunch of substrates in a room and grow mushrooms. They look the same. They taste the same, but they're not the same. Mm. So it's a lot harder and a lot more expensive to do what we do. So I have a co-op of farmers, and it depends on the weather. Their log that they have inoculated isn't always going to have everything that they're supposed to. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into place, which is why it's difficult. For instance, I'm working on a new product and I have exhausted my co-op. So I've gone out and searched for more people, growers who are doing what my farmers are doing. And I'm working with a food company to help her develop recipes. So we go out there together. I tell her what to look for. I got back, let's say, 8 different quotes for just lion's mane mushroom. And here's the price differences. One is $12 per pound and one is $80 per pound.
Wow.
What do you think the difference is?
One's done properly and one's done quickly.
Exactly. So one of the new things I'm seeing is they're using sawdust. I'm like, what? Let's think about that. Huh? Think about the human food industry. What do they do with their scraps and shit? It ends up in the pet food industry.
Right.
So the lumber industry, it's probably a byproduct of the lumber industry. And this is a way to do something with that. It's not the same. It matters.
No. Well, props for letting them think a little sustainable, but right. It doesn't exactly. Work with the science.
Exactly. So it is very difficult. Most people are doing it the wrong way. And most people, like, I'm in San Diego right now, went to San Diego's, you know, fungi group, whatever, and everybody's growing them wrong. And they all think that it's great and wonderful and they're doing the right thing, and they're not. Most of the mushroom products on the market are what I told you and have no mushrooms in them at all.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's kind of the same with some of the vitamins that you can get at some of these cheaper big box stores. It's right. All filler.
And synthetics.
Yeah.
It's a synthetic version of the vitamin. We do not have to take any synthetic medicine and not have to eat any synthetic food or vitamins or minerals. We can get it all by the real food or plant or mushroom. We do not have to have synthetics in our body.
Yeah. The one thing that I did read on your bio, you work with whole food, like the whole plant. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah. Whole plant's confusing because you consider like the whole stalk and leaves and everything. So no, it is a whole plant medicine, meaning we just take that flower, which is where all the essential oils and medicine lives, and extract it with supercritical CO2 extraction, which is basically a gas that gently separates it from the plant material.
Okay.
And then doesn't hurt any of those compounds because they're all so important.
So is whole plant as in on a molecular level?
Yeah, whole plant medicine, meaning okay. It's got all the goodies in it. People think it means the whole entire plant.
Right.
What typically happens in the cannabis or hemp industry is, you know, they harvest the flower, they dry the flower, the rest of the plant gets usually taken off and given to the pet industry or broad spectrum or done something else with. The flower is where all the medicine lives. That's how human medicine is created. And we were talking, this just made me think of it. One of the things that makes me so upset is when they call this medicine alternative medicine, and it's not. It's the original medicine. It's the medicine that's 3,000 years old, and the Chinese have used it, and it's Ayurvedic, and it's all of these things. And they want us to think that it's the second choice or the weird choice or the alternate to what's really the first choice. And that's not it at all.
Mm.
It's the other way.
Yeah, it's probably by design that they're decided, well, we'll go alternative because, you know.
Right.
That'll trip like them.
Not normal. Not what's like accepted. It's the alternative. Right. No, it should be the first choice. Pharmaceuticals should be the alternative when we can't get or we're in an emergency situation where we have to stop something or whatever. But it should be the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the medical and pharmaceutical industries as a whole, my opinion is they need to get away from the in the moment type medicine and start focusing on what do we do to prevent these things from starting in the first place.
Yeah.
But much more profitable the other.
I know. But we should have not health care, but preventative care.
Right.
I think the conversation needs to switch, for us, for our animals, for our plants. I mean, there's so much crap fertilizer on the market that isn't real. It's just synthetic, and it's not helping our foods that we are ingesting be at their optimum level because they're so depleted from poor farming industries and all the chemicals.
Dead dirt. So you can't grow nutritious vegetables and fruit trees and whatever in dead dirt. And that's what's literally what's happening. And that's literally another thing that mushrooms do for the environment. Watch that Netflix documentary so that you can see what I'm talking about, like how it's so important. You'll be like, yes, I am part of you, nature. Yeah.
And what's the name of that documentary?
Fantastic Fungi. On Netflix. It is so much fun to watch. And you'll love it. You'll just love it.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. I think I'm out of things to say.
Yeah. I think that another thing that really stands out between the holistic medicine treatments or options, because it's not always treatment or medication. It could just be options.
And we're not even given the option.
No.
Given that option.
But when you compare that to the allopathic treatments, Western medicine or allopathic medicine likes to piecemeal things. Oh, you got a sore neck? Oh, okay, we'll give you physiotherapy, or we'll give you a painkiller, or we'll give you something to deal with that pain right there, even though that may not be where the problem is at all. And I'm starting to notice that more because of my exploration, because I have a few body issues in that. And I did test out a physiotherapist about a year and a half ago after I had a pinched nerve in my back. And I went for a couple of visits and I was frustrated because I was trying to tell the physiotherapist, well, these are all the things that are happening. But he was like, no, we're just going to deal with this one thing and then we'll deal with these other things later.
Standard of care.
Yeah.
You have this. This is what you do. They don't consider the individual in front of them, the animal in front of them. It's you have this. This is the protocol. They don't even use their own, like, let's figure it out type of thing.
Yeah.
I have noticed when you become your own healthcare advocate with your doctors and you create a relationship with your doctor or even with your vet, I've seen it in both my own healthcare and in my animal's healthcare. The more conversations you have and the more questions you ask as the advocate, the more I think over time, if you have a really good doctor, they'll start listening to you and they'll start seeing you as an entire being. I don't have a primary care physician. I have an endocrinologist and he's amazing. I've been going to him for many, many years. And even though I only get to have like, say, 15 minutes with him when I have my yearly appointments, I kind of use them as a primary care, get all my things checked. We have conversations and he has, in regards to me, kind of taken on some of the things that I've done. And we have a really good conversation. And I've noticed that with vets, the same thing. If you have a really good relationship with your vet, and they respect you and you respect them and you ask the proper questions, you can build that relationship where you can have that back and forth, where you can stand in your power and in your truth and be the healthcare advocate your pet or yourself needs and work with them. Instead of letting them dictate to you what they think you need, you are using the conversation to cater it to that particular relationship. And I don't think a lot of people take time out of their appointments to create those connections. And I just want to shout out, you know, while we're having this conversation about healthcare, is make sure you have a relationship with your doctors. Don't just go to see them when something's hurting.
Right.
You know, I know there are some doctors that you only see when you need them, like an oncologist or, you know, a physiotherapist, like Miranda was saying. You know, you don't go see them on a regular basis. But if you have like a primary care, or like myself, my endocrinologist, I see every year, you can forge that relationship and you can really get a full, both holistic acceptance, not necessarily agreeing, but an acceptance of what you are doing for yourself. And you can create a really good healthcare plan for yourself or your pet. I think that's really important.
Yeah, very, very well said and very important. And I also want to point out that, you know, the saying, you got to kiss a lot of frogs before you find your prince.
Right.
Yeah.
Goes for everything. So you may not be as lucky. You may have to kiss a lot of veterinarians or doctors before you find that one that does give you mutual respect. Mm. The best part about the veterinarian part is that literally you can find your favorite holistic integrative online and most likely get to do telehealth or a consultation with them. And there's nothing better than, and this is literally how I operate. Remember, I told you I have that team of board of advisors. So if I ever suspected something was off or wrong, I just would go get blood work or x-rays and send it to my board of advisors and go, what do you think? Kind of thing. But you can find, it's hard, but you can find that person. And it should be respect. You should be able to say, I did this. I'm using a full spectrum hemp extract and, you know, he's doing great kind of thing. And they should respect it and not do what I know we've all heard before. All right, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or that I've said to me, well, I can't be responsible. Don't come to me when your dog is dead. I've had that said to me lots of times.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
oh,
well, that's not a very good doctor. Well, that's really nice. To say something like that.
No, don't worry. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell everybody you said that to me instead.
Yeah, right.
I'll never be coming back to you again. But yeah, that's so important. And when you do get to have that relationship with a doctor, it's beautiful. It really is. I, you know, my favorite vet, I get to text her all the time. And I love it because now I have her texting me going, hey, got a dog has this, this. You think this, this? Yep. It's great. And that's the way it should be. Because I am an expert in my field. And you're an expert in whatever you're doing. And we should be trading information and stories and doing whatever's best for the animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, these people are professionals, but I think that we need to remember that they are trained in what they do, but they're not trained in individuals. They don't know us better than we know ourselves. They don't know our pets. They only know what they were trained to do, which is in a general sense.
Yeah. Or what the test results show them.
Yeah.
And let's remember that in the pet side of things, the school is being taught by the person who runs the doctor's office, makes the food, and makes the prescription meds. So they're literally being taught their way of practicing medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been taught that, you know, milk thistle is cleanse the liver or whatever. They don't know anything about that. They don't even know it exists. Matter of fact, when I get invited to speak at schools, which I don't know if you've ever been in a vet school, the hallways are plastered with Hill's Science Diet and Purina propaganda all over the place. They give vet students free dog food. And when I'm invited to speak, I'm invited by the Holistic Club. And I get to speak to them in a lecture hall during their lunch hour.
Oh, wow.
And there's about 100 students in there eating their lunch and learning about cannabis medicine from me on their lunch hour. That's who I want to be my vet.
Mm.
Not the ones that didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. The brainwashing, the propaganda, everything. I'm on my Apoquil kick again because I just did a TikTok video. And so people are telling me that I'm lying and I'm spreading untruths. And I'm like, I am reading from the Apoquil pamphlet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have seen that lately, but they've done an update in 2020. which I'm assuming that it went a little like this, that the FDA and the vet board, whatever the CVM, the vet board that oversees it all, that's with FDA. I think that they've got so many complaints from veterinarians and pet parents that they just told Apoquil they just need to put it on the pamphlet, which no one ever sees. No one ever gets that pamphlet.
Yeah. And nobody ever reads it because the text is so small, you need a magnifying glass.
And if you read it now, it literally, there's an update from 2020 and it literally lists all of these cancers, all of these dogs, all of these things on there, and you don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And now they're pushing Cytopoint. And when you go to Cytopoint's website, you can't even find the insert or the warning. They're pushing a come in and get your injection, an app that reminds you to come in and get your injection every 8 weeks. So how cool is that? Now you don't even have to have the pamphlet. Your vet is injecting something. Vet's happy because you've made this person come back every 8 weeks. And I'm sure you're probably giving them blood work to make sure that that Cytopoint's not killing them too quickly. But these drugs are horrific. And all of they do is literally suppress the immune system. Like Apoquil suppresses or blocks something from JAX1 or JAX3 receptor. Cannabis does the same thing. Mm. It modulates it. It doesn't block it, and it doesn't block the immune response, which means it's literally blocking the immune system's job, which means what? That anything else that they come in contact or with will, you know, make them sick or whatever. So this drug, oh my God, I already forgot how many, because it's like 30 million prescriptions have been written. And we wonder why one in two dogs is dying of cancer. Mm. This is why. These drugs are killing them.
That's scary. Mm-hmm.
It is. And it's over allergies. And Apoquil was originally created to stop the reaction. You're supposed to use it for like 3 days to figure out what the source is and deal with it. Nope. Vets are giving it long term forever. And these dogs are dropping dead before they even hit age 9 with cancer.
You know, a lot of vets, they're doing really good work. Right. I mean, they really are. The majority of them, I would say 99.9% of them, have these huge giant hearts for animals, but they know what they know. Right. They know what they're told. And a lot of the vets, if they don't own their own vet clinic,
do what they're told.
They have to do what they're told. And if their boss is saying, no, you have to push this, they have to do it or they lose their job. And that is one of the things that I just want to bring in before, you know, before we end our interview is, in my opinion, I say that very clearly, in my opinion, the veterinary associations all around the world and the pharmaceuticals are forcing veterinarians to break their Hippocratic oath.
Yep.
And that is something that needs to be addressed. We have to stop doing that because animals are not just things that we live with. These are living, breathing, sentient beings that deserve better.
And that
they deserve
we love,
to thrive.
And that we love like family.
Yep.
And also, let's remember, this is also the reason that veterinarians are the highest in suicide rate. Mm. Imagine.
Yep.
When I said before, I would have never cut it as a veterinarian. I'm one of those people. Imagine going into a profession because you want to help animals. And you get out of school and you're $250,000 in debt. And now you're forced to go work for someone. You're not helping animals. You're putting them down and you're putting them. That's what you're doing all day long. And you're not seeing anything get better. That is why. So, yes, I am not a vet hater or basher. I am a huge advocate for my holistics and integratives and those that really are in it to help the animals. Absolutely. I will do anything for them. But there are a lot of bad players who are in it for the wrong reasons. And if you do not feel good when you walk into that vet office or talk to that vet, move on. Go find another one.
Yeah.
Again, you can get a pet health coach. Now you can get telemedicine, a consultation with some of the best people out there. So do that.
Well, I think it's, like I said, I think it's the higher ups, the people they have to answer to, because if you do something against some of these big associations and stuff like that, they will blacklist you.
Oh yeah, I know.
And you will lose your license.
Oh, I know.
For doing what you set out to do in the first place, and that is help, heal, and save animals. Mm-hmm. That I think that needs to be a part of this conversation. Absolutely. We're kind of all over the place, but it all boils down to just health and holistic health and making sure that our animals thrive and not just survive.
Exactly. Amen.
Do you have any other questions, Miranda?
No, you basically answered all the questions. 9-10 questions that I had planned to ask.
That's okay. I mean,
she's good at what she does.
I know. And we talked for an hour, so hopefully we covered everything. But you know what? I'll come back on if you want, if there's something that I didn't cover.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that there's so much more detail.
We'd love to have you back on because this information has to come out.
Well, what's great is I'm happy to introduce you to any of my board of advisors or veterinarians who can also speak of it, which would be cool because I think it would be awesome for your listeners to hear a veterinarian talk about using the medicine. Definitely. And how it works better than anything and no side effects and whatever. I could listen to that all day.
Yeah. Our listeners deserve to hear the truth. Right. They really do. And they need to hear it from the mouth of those that do this.
Yep. I agree.
So thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to have you on again and again and again, because this is so important. I'm so much of a health advocate for my animals. I always have been. And, you know, there's avenues out there for everybody who loves animals and who loves to live with animals. And we want to make sure that we spotlight these healthy avenues. It's really important to us.
I agree. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, good. Yeah.
You're very welcome.
it's an open invitation for you to schedule another time whenever it works for you.
Well, anything, let's at least do a once a year thing, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So that we can, like, because then I can update you on research and, you know, what we found and what's new and all that.
Yeah. So again, it was so wonderful to have you on. Where can people learn more about you and what you do in your different companies? Because you also have a podcast as well.
I do.
And you have a lot of things. So let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you if they have any questions or they want to follow your journey with the company and whatever.
Awesome. The name of my podcast is Your Natural Dog. And I literally just interview holistics, you know, and experts or people who have been, you know, in the industry for a really long time and share their expert opinions and cases. And then my website is AngelaArtolino.com, my name. My products are CBD Dog Health and Myco Dog. And that's how you can find them all.
Awesome. And we'll have all those links on the show notes. We'll also add the link of projectcbd.org. So they have that. And again, thank you so much. It's been wonderful. And come back anytime.
Have a wonderful
evening. And thank you for spending this time with us.
You bet. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks.
Okay. Have a good night. Bye-bye. Wow, that was such an amazing episode. And I know I say that a lot, but I love when we have guests like Angela because they give us so much information that we can send out to you guys and hopefully, you know, be able to start being your own healthcare advocates for your animals. We're so grateful that she talked with us and we're going to have her on again and again, as much as she'll have us. If you ever want to reach out again, her email is AngelaArtolino.com. And we'll put that in the show notes, plus the other links. And if you have any questions about what we just talked about, feel free to email us at theanimalfilespodcast@gmail.com and we will help you out as best we can. And we will be putting her stuff also on our website. So that's theanimalfilespodcast.com. So you can check there, give us a little bit of time. We'll have all that for you. But check out Angela's website if you really want the information right away. Anything you want to add, Miranda?
I think you covered it all. I think there's a little bit more information about Angela's background and contact information that we didn't share in the podcast, but we will put that in the show notes so that you have everything available at your fingertips.
Yes, wonderful. So thank you for joining us this evening and helping us spread this information out to the masses. Share this podcast, like it, review it, do all the things. And we will see you next time on the Animal Files podcast. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to rate, review, and recommend the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want some more great info, be sure to check out www.theanimalfilespodcast.com.